Welcome, friends in the valley, to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm John Sloop, along with Dean Welty, director of the Valley Family Forum. Our co-host, Rita Dunaway, is again on assignment in San Diego, giving a speech at a conference for lawyers on the very important subject of the Convention of States Initiative. And Dean, when Rita gets back, I'm sure we'll hear about that. But Dean, I suspect that you'll agree with me today. As an Orthodox Christian who holds to a biblical worldview, standing at the crossroads of faith and culture, I feel these days like I'm getting run over by a steamroller. This has been a discouraging summer for believers. Let's look at the headlines. The Supreme Court legislates from the bench, props up Obamacare. Next, they play God and redefine marriage. Five American soldiers are gunned down by a lone wolf Islamic jihadist, and the administration won't even lower the flag in their honor, much less even name the enemy as Islamic fundamentalism. In Charleston, South Carolina, African-American worshipers are gunned down in church around a Bible study by an evil racist. In San Francisco, a young woman is gunned down by an illegal alien. And Planned Parenthood shows its true colors in horrifying videos that reveal their utter lack of respect for life, morality, and decency. And Dean, right here in our own city, a behavior the Bible consistently calls shameful abomination will be openly celebrated in what is called a pride parade. And an historic Christian university, your alma mater, forsakes its motto, "Thy Word is Truth," and changes its hiring policy to welcome persons living in same-sex relationships. Dean, I'm normally, as you know, a pretty positive person. I like to see the glass half full. But these days, this summer, I resonate with those haunting lines from the pen of poet William Butler Yeats, who wrote, "Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed. And everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity." But Dean, this is nothing new, is it? The Bible is full of examples of people of God living at the crossroads when it seemed like things were falling apart, and the center could not hold.
Well, John, thank you very much. I came in here all cheery and bright and excited, and now you have driven me even deeper into the slough of despair and despond. I'm going to go home, pull the covers over my head, go into my fetal position, and won't come back until the sun comes up again.
Well, I wanted to start with a dose of reality, and then we'll bring it home with a little hope at the end.
Well, John, basically what you have just described is what I think we see as a topsy-turvy world where evil is called good and good is called evil. Yep. That's not new with me. That's from Isaiah chapter 5. Yep. And that's the point. We're living in a world that is not new to God, sadly. And I know he is weeping over the situations that you've described, just as you and I weep. And we do feel overwhelmed. But again, as you said, the Bible is full of situations where the church, and this is what we're going to be talking about this morning, where the church, the culture, and the state frequently collide.
Yes.
For example, from the Bible again, you have the situation of Moses versus Pharaoh.
Yep.
Let my people go. You have the situation of Elijah versus King Ahab. The situation of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego versus King Nebuchadnezzar when they were commanded to bow down before a false god. You have the Old Testament prophets against the corrupt leaders that ruled over them. You have the situation of John the Baptist, who called out the king for his adultery, for Peter and John and the Apostle Paul, who were commanded to stop preaching, and ultimately Jesus, who was being victimized and persecuted and eventually crucified by ruthless Roman and Jewish rulers. This is the collision of the church and the state. And today is no different. We look particularly at the Middle East, where Christians are imprisoned, they're tortured, and they're beheaded by Islamic terrorists, which you've already mentioned. But we're also persecuted in America in more subtle ways. In the past several years, we have seen a rapidly escalating pattern of hostility against Christians who are taking a stand for their biblical beliefs, and particularly on moral issues involving the sanctity of life and of marriage. We've already discussed this at great length in earlier programs, where bakers, florists, photographers, educators, business leaders, and even pastors and nuns are being challenged to bow to the state on these issues. And here, John, I want to hear your encouragement now, because some Christians, as a result of all this, are inclined to pull back. They're inclined to compromise their beliefs. You've already mentioned this Christian university, let's name it Eastern Mennonite University, compromising their beliefs to go along, to get along. As I said, EMU is a good example. We'll talk about that later in the program. So that's the inclination to pull back. But we're also seeing a growing skepticism in our culture about the relevance of the church to our daily lives. It's not doing any good. It's not making any difference. So why bother? On the other hand, I mean, we're caught in a bind. There are those who are criticizing the church because it is overly involved in political issues. The church should stick to worship and evangelism. In either case, why go to church at all? So, John, here's the question. Against this background, what is the proper role of the church in the world today? A world gone stark raving mad. And why does it matter anyway?
Wow.
Come on, we need some answers.
I told you I feel like I'm getting run over at the crossroads. Dean, I'm reminded of my own Reformed Presbyterian heritage that lifted up in its creeds and its confessions something known as the six great ends of the church. Let me just share those with you. In answer to your question, what is the role of the church? First, the proclamation of the gospel for the salvation of humankind. That's the first great end of the church.
Yes.
The second, they described as the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God. In other words, once you bring them into the church, you have to love them and take care of them and encourage them to be disciples.
Yep.
The third is the maintenance of divine worship. The fourth, which I know you and I resonate with, the fourth great end of the church is the preservation of divine truth. The fifth is promoting social righteousness. That's believers living out the gospel at the crossroads. And the sixth is the exhibition of the kingdom of heaven to the world. In other words, following up on Jesus' teaching in the Lord's Prayer, you know, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. What does that look like? And so I also think of Paul's words to the Romans in Romans chapter 12, which is sort of a theme verse for our Crossroads program, you know, where he says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. And then he says, but do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed and be transforming. And so the role of the church is not to conform to the world, but rather to transform the world by living out these great ends. And of course, the first one we talked about is the proclamation of the gospel. Jesus was all about words and deeds, not either or, but both and. And so the church should boldly proclaim the unique and saving gospel of Jesus Christ. We have to, as that old hymn says, lift up the cross and the atonement, because only through the cross and the atonement are people called out of darkness into light. And I fear that the church has not lifted up the cross faithfully. We've promoted good works and good deeds and turning the other cheek and all those kinds of things, but we have failed to lift up the cross, which is the only thing that has the power to transform life. And of course, the church proclaims the gospel not only at home, but also abroad. As you know, I was born on the mission field. Spent 16 years of my life in Brazil, South America, and developed a passion for sharing the gospel, not only at home, but around the world. And then partnering with the church, Dean, are these what are sometimes known as para-church ministries, which means coming alongside the church. You have the ministry of Young Life. I have two children that are on staff with Young Life. Campus ministries like Campus Crusade for Christ, the Navigators, InterVarsity, which has had such a tremendous influence, primarily through its literature. InterVarsity Press has put in the hands of young students these wonderful resources that equip them to be salt and light. Prison ministries, all of the church must continue to work with these within itself and outside to proclaim the gospel. But again, it's more than just the words, Dean. It's backing up the words with the deeds, which we see in the life and the ministry of Jesus. It's a demonstration of the gospel for all to see. And here are some of the prime examples are the work of William Booth and the Salvation Army, the Catholic Relief Agency that does such good, Franklin Graham's Samaritan's Purse. Dean, I've been to Boone, North Carolina, to Franklin's ministry there.
So
perhaps
have we.
Janet have too. But just to see how they are putting word and deed together. And it's a beautiful example to the world that Christians care about the needs of a broken world. And Samaritan's Purse is typically the first to show up. And then World Vision, so many other medical missions, pregnancy centers, the importance of Christian adoption agencies, our own local Eastgate Ministries that deals with teen moms, that Greater Hope that deals with sexual brokenness and the healing that comes there. New Creation, we're going to be talking about that in an upcoming program. And then the way the church responds to these tragic crises around the world. That's the church's role, is to proclaim the gospel in word and in deed. And then also, the church has a tremendous responsibility to equip families and children in particular with what I like to call grounding them in a biblical worldview, equipping them in the church and in the home to be able to be salt and light in the world. The role of Christian schools, I think we have planned a couple of programs on Crossroads about the importance of Christian schools, home schools, the importance of that. Of course, the Sunday school. Right now, summer vacation Bible schools. There was a recent article in the paper about Fresh Air program, that wonderful opportunity for Christians to open their homes and bring kids from the inner city there. But Dean, in addition to all of these things about proclaiming the gospel, demonstrating the gospel, you and I were talking about the little book of Jude. It's only one chapter. And there Jude says we are called to contend for the gospel and for the faith once delivered. And this is where I think we've dropped the ball. There hasn't been enough of that contending, that boldness, that courage to be salt and light in the face of the fact that you might get run over at the crossroads. So Dean, let's hear you talk a little bit more about these areas of conflict and confrontation and the collision at the crossroads.
Well, John, you really covered a lot of territory about the role of the church. And you know, it reminds me of what one of the founders said. If the whole world would believe in and practice what is taught in the Bible, what a utopia this would be.
Yep.
And it raises the question, what would America look like today without the influence of the church? And yet we see the church under attack.
Yep.
By the secular agents of evil who are trying to transform, I use that word advisedly, transform America into something that our founders would never have recognized or approved of.
Yeah, I think, let's just call it what it is. Our president, when he ran for office, he said, I'm going to fundamentally transform America, and he is He's doing exactly what he told us he was going to do.
I was thinking of that on the way in this morning, John, that and I feel sorry for what is happening, but I think it's a result of people, including our president, who were not raised with that knowledge of our Judeo-Christian heritage. They were not raised in the Christian church that believes in the saving gospel of Jesus Christ and his commandments to live out that gospel in our everyday life. Well, we're going off on a sidetrack here, but let's talk about the role of the church as salt and light in this world. And I think, John, you have seen this in many churches. Yes, they're willing to proclaim the gospel and evangelize. Yes, they're willing to demonstrate the gospel in these areas of compassion and relief for the needy. But there is less support for being salt and light in the culture because it seems too political.
Yep.
Nevertheless, we believe that the church must be engaged, even though it may involve conflict, confrontation, and even collision. Now, where are those areas, those points of challenge, where many of us need to step up and speak out? First is the issue of life. You've already mentioned what Planned Parenthood is doing with regard to that the savage destruction of unborn human life. So life is one where the one side doesn't care about the unborn life in order to be a destructive agent of evil for our selfish convenience in practicing sex without responsibility. The second issue of confrontation is marriage and the family. You've already talked about the Supreme Court decision. We're going to be talking about EMU a little later. And then the sexual behavior, standards of decency, meaning the intersection of pornography, human trafficking, and abortion, which I believe we're planning to talk about next week. And then the free exercise of religion, which our current administration, Heifeldblum particularly, in the EEOC said, when sexual freedom and religious liberty come into conflict, sexual freedom should win. That's the environment we're living in. So let's just give two examples. We referred to Eastern Mennonite University several times. We're going to talk a little bit more in detail now about that. But we have taken two steps backward in the valley recently. First of all, where Eastern Mennonite University has announced that it has changed its personnel policy to allow for hiring people in same-sex marriages. And here's the point. In so doing, EMU has betrayed its commitment to stand on its school motto of "Thy Word is Truth." I looked at that motto during the time that I was a student at EMU. It inspired me. And we all know that "Thy Word refers to the Bible."
And Dean, in your day, as I understand it, those words were in large banner across the stage. Where are they today?
They were in the chapel. We saw it every day. Yeah. Today, they are inscribed, it looks like a tombstone, on the front lawn of the university. And I think it's appropriate because truth has been buried.
And Dean, I drove by it today on the road to the studio.
And you didn't see it.
It is practically covered by shrubs.
Yeah.
And Dean, I'm going to write a letter and I'm going to request that in light of the decision they have just made, that they chisel those words off their logo because they no longer can claim that.
They either have to return to their foundation or they have to get a new motto. But it's important. That motto is important because the word teaches very clearly that all sexual relationships belong only within the covenant of marriage between one man and one woman. That's the truth of the word that they claim to believe in. And secondly, that word teaches that sexual relationships between people of the same gender are prohibited. Therefore, EMU, and I'm so sad to say this, it breaks my heart, EMU has abandoned biblical authority and bowed instead to the opinion of man and to the passing whims of culture. So my question, John, is, I'll take a stab at this and you can add to it. How should the church respond to this? I would suggest two things. First of all, we have to commit ourselves as a church to remain faithful to biblical teaching on this issue as on all issues, regardless of what this self-identified Christian university has chosen to do. We must remain faithful. Secondly, and this breaks my heart, I think we are compelled to break off relationship with any institution, including Eastern Mennonite University, that identifies itself as Christian, but which no longer regards the Bible as truth, despite what its motto still proclaims.
Dean, I think I shared with you, one of my neighbors came to me this week and was lamenting this decision. And I did not know this. He says, my wife was enrolled in the nursing program at EMU. And as a result of this tragic reversal of standards and abandoning the biblical worldview, my wife has dropped out of the program because she does not want to have a diploma from a university, which he called a chino. I said, what's a chino? He said, Christian in name only.
Well, John, this has less relevance to the Valley, but I was a student at EMU, but I graduated from Goshen College,
yes,
which is a sister Mennonite college in Indiana, which is where I was raised. Both of these universities have now taken this same decision, and not only is it in violation of thy word is truth, the authority of the scripture, but it has also violated the denominational doctrine,
yes,
which does not recognize same-sex relationships. It breaks my heart.
Yep.
So, do you have any other response? How should the church respond?
I think we're good.
Remain faithful and break off relationships where they have abandoned,
yep,
the word of truth. The second thing that has happened in the Valley is, you've already mentioned it, the Shenandoah Valley Pride Festival. It was organized by LGBT activists, held on Court Square in Harrisonburg, and it promoted as normal and good the kind of sexual activity that we have just been describing and that the Bible clearly condemns. Therefore, this is not about diversity, as the organizers so cleverly claim, but rather this is about putting perversity on public display. Perversity, not diversity. By doing so, it has further undermined the high moral values of our community and set a terrible example for our children. So, John, I'm going to ask again, how should the church respond? And I'll make a couple of suggestions, and you can pile on. The first thing we must do is to make continually and abundantly clear as a church that God has forbidden all sexual relationships outside of marriage as between only one man and one woman, and especially to refrain from sexual activity between people of the same gender. We must continue to proclaim that truth. Secondly, we must proclaim the gospel of salvation that you mentioned early on as a primary role of the church. Proclaim the gospel of salvation to all sinners. That includes you and me.
Yep.
And thirdly, the role of the church is to guide us to a closer relationship with God in obedience to his plan for our lives as laid out in his word. And you mentioned that as one of the roles of the church, discipleship.
Yep.
What else should the church be doing?
Well, Dean, I think that in specific response to this parade, I think the church should respond positively and not negatively. And by that I mean, I hope that the believers will not line the sidewalks and shout unchristlike slogans at these blessed folks that walk by.
Whether it's a parade in Harrisonburg. By the way, this is taking place
all over the
in Virginia. I think Equality Virginia, which is the state organizer for these events, is taking place about 8 different locations, not at the same time,
right,
but over a period of months. So this goes not only to Harrisonburg, but in all events like
exactly.
this.
And I would just hope,
yes,
that believers would respond graciously with the truth.
Yes.
And it starts from the pulpit. I think that every pastor in the Valley, either before or after this parade, should either do a sermon or a series of sermons on the meaning of biblical marriage. We have to simply lift up what the positive role model is. And I'll have some more to say as we wrap up. But I think we have to respond not with anger or with hate, but with speaking the truth, but in love. And sometimes that it takes courage to do that, but we mustn't back down, but we have to do it in a loving way.
Well, John, that's a great segue to my next point,
yep.
that we must do this in a positive way. And I want to give an example of one. These were two steps backward,
yep.
which I deplore and I grieve over it. But a church in the Valley has taken a positive step forward. That's the Valley Church of Christ. Now, I hope our listeners will mark this down. This afternoon, Sunday, July 26th, the Valley Church of Christ is hosting a Valley-wide family prayer picnic. It begins at 4 o'clock again this Sunday for a prayer for our marriages, for our children, for our community, and for our country. Everyone is invited. For those who may not know, the church is located at 1570 Virginia Avenue, which is the intersection of Route 42 and Acorn Drive, across from and just north of Harrisonburg and VMRC, the Virginia Mennonite Retirement Community. The church itself will provide the hot dogs, the drinks, and the paper products. Everyone else should bring a side dish to add to the table. So now, John, in all of this, in the culture and in the public square, what can we ourselves personally do to help carry out the role of the church?
Thank you, Dean. Before we go on, I just want to say a word of affirmation and encouragement to the pastor of Valley Church of Christ,
yes.
who is Todd Collier.
Yes.
You've heard him preach.
Yes.
He has been with us on our trip to Washington, D.C. for Watchmen on the Wall. And Todd is an example of a pastor who is speaking the truth in love.
Yes.
And so congratulations to Todd.
By the way, this was suggested by one of his lay members.
Yes, wonderful. Fantastic.
Yep.
What's the role of the church in all of this?
And what can we do to help?
I think about that little parable Jesus told about the farmer that went to sleep. And while he was sleeping, the enemy came and sowed the tares in his field. And so I think the first call to the church is, wake up, church, wake up. The church has been asleep at the wheel, Dean, for too long. We have allowed a secular humanist left agenda to take over the country, to take over the education of our young people from elementary to the university. And the church now is saying, what in the world has happened? The church has been asleep, so the church needs to wake up. And the church needs to wise up, which means we need to inform ourselves about what's going on in the culture. We have to read the newspapers. We have to go to city council meetings. We have to go to Richmond. We have to go to Washington. We have to wise up about who is running for office and support those who articulate a biblical worldview. We need to wise up. We need to stand up, Dean.
I got you. I'm standing, John. I'm standing.
You can't be seen on the radio, Dean. Go ahead and sit down. Ephesians, over and over again in Ephesians, Paul said in the wrapping up of that powerful letter, he says, take a stand, stand up, stand up, stand up. Again, do so positively, do so graciously, but stand up for Pete's sake. And then we need to speak up. And this is not only from the pulpit, but people in what I like to call their Monday morning pulpits need to speak where they live, work, and play. Write letters to the editor. Encourage pastors to preach biblically and so forth. And then again, be involved in public policy. Understand what's going on. Go to the Family Research Council website, Tony Perkins and his crowd. Tune in to the Valley Family Forum and just be involved by finding out what's going on. Well, thank you, Dean, for an exciting program today. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. We're so grateful for your contributions that keep this program on the air. This week, dear friends, Ellen and Charlie sent in a check for $300. What an encouragement. Won't you folks listening consider making a contribution too? Send your gifts to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. Till next week. This is John Sloop and Dean Welty reminding you that as bleak as it may seem, Christ, the center, does hold and gives us hope at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.